Chapter 53. The Marriage. The consternation which ensued on the death of Zarosky speedily sent all his camp followers, army, and sea to the right about. They struck their tents at the first news of his discomfiture, and each man laying hold of what he could, the whole of the gallant force which had marched under his banner in the morning had disappeared ere the sun rose. On that night, as it may be imagined, the gates of the castle of Cleves were not shut. Everybody was free to come in. Wine butts were broached in all the courts. The pickled meat prepared in such lots for the siege was distributed among the people, who crowded to congratulate their beloved sovereign on his victory. And the prince, as was customary with that good man, who never lost an opportunity of giving a dinner party, had a splendid entertainment made ready for the upper classes, the whole concluding with a tasteful display of fireworks. In the midst of these entertainments, our old friend the Count of Homburg arrived at the castle. The stalwart old warrior swore by St. Hugo that he was grieved the killing of the Zarosky had been taken out of his hand. The laughing Cleves vowed by St. Mendigo, Homburg could never have finished off his enemy so satisfactorily as the unknown knight had just done. But who was he, was the question which now agitated the bosom of these two old nobles. How to find him, how to reward the champion and restorer of the honor and happiness of Cleves. They agreed over supper that he should be sought for everywhere. Beadles were sent round the principal cities within 50 miles, and the description of the knight advertised, in the Journal de Frankfurt and the Algemeen Zeitung. The hand of the Princess Helen was solemnly offered to him in these advertisements, with the reversion of the Prince of Cleves' splendid, though somewhat dilapidated property. "But we don't know him, my dear papa," faintly ejaculated that young lady. "Home impostor may come in a suit of plain armor, and pretend that he was the champion who overcame the Zarosky, a prince who had his faults certainly, but whose attachment for me, I can never forget, and how are you to say, whether he is the real knight or not? There are so many deceivers in this world," added the princess, in tears, "that one can't be too cautious now. The fact is, that she was thinking of the desertion of Otto in the morning, by which instance of faithlessness her heart was well nigh broken. As for that youth and his comrade Wolfgang, to the astonishment of everybody at their impudence, they came to the archer's mess that night, as if nothing had happened, got their supper, partaking both of meat and drink most plentifully, fell asleep when their comrades began to describe the events of the day, and the admirable achievements of the unknown warrior, and turning into their hammocks, did not appear on parade in the morning until 20 minutes after the names were called. When the Prince of Cleves heard of the return of these deserters, he was in a towering passion. 'Here were you, fellows,' shouted he, 'during the time my castle was at its utmost need?' 'Otto,' replied, 'we were out on particular business.' 'Does a soldier leave his post on the day of battle, sir?' exclaimed the prince. 'Who know the reward of such death? And death you merit. But you are a soldier only of yesterday, and yesterday's victory has made me merciful. Hanged you shall not be, as you merit only flogged, both of you. Parade the men, Colonel de Kelstern, after breakfast, and give these scoundrels 500 apiece.' You should have seen how young Otto bounded, when this information was thus abruptly conveyed to him. 'Log me,' cried he. 'Log Otto of, not so, my father,' said the Princess Helen, who had been standing by during the conversation, and who had looked at Otto all the while with the most ineffable scorn. 'Otso. Although these persons have forgotten their duty,' she laid a particularly sarcastic emphasis on the word persons, 'we have had no need of their services, and have luckily found others more faithful. You promised your daughter a boon, papa. It is the pardon of these two persons. Let them go, and quit a service they have disgraced. A mistress, that is, a master they have deceived. Drum them out of the castle, Ticklestern. Strip their uniforms from their backs, and never let me hear of the scoundrels again. So saying, the old prince angrily turned on his heel to breakfast, leaving the two young men to the fun and derision of their surrounding comrades. The noble Count of Hamburg, who was taking his usual airing on the ramparts before breakfast, came up at this juncture and asked what was the row. Otto blushed when he saw him and turned away rapidly, but the Count too, catching a glimpse of him, with 100 exclamations of joyful surprise seized upon the lad, hugged him to his manly breast, kissed him most affectionately, and almost burst into tears as he embraced him. For, in sooth, the good Count had thought his godson long ere this at the bottom of the Silver Rhine. The Prince of Cleves, who had come to the breakfast parlor window, to invite his guest to enter, as the tea was made, beheld this strange scene from the window, as did the lovely tea maker likewise, with breathless and beautiful agitation. The old Count and the archer strolled up and down the battlements in deep conversation. By the gestures of surprise and delight exhibited by the former, 'twas easy to see the young archer was conveying some very strange and pleasing news to him, though the nature of the conversation was not allowed to transpire. "A godson of mine," said the noble Count, when interrogated over his muffins. "Know his family, worthy people, sad Scapegrace, ran away, parents longing for him, glad you did not flog him, devil to pay, and so forth." The Count was a man of few words, and told his tale in this brief, artless manner. But why, at its conclusion, did the gentle Helen leave the room, her eyes filled with tears? She left the room once more to kiss a certain lock of yellow hair as he had pilfered. A dazzling, delicious thought, a strange wild hope, arose in her soul. When she appeared again, she made some side-handed inquiries regarding Otto with that gentle artifice oft employed by women, but he was gone. He and his companion were gone. The Count of Hamburg had likewise taken his departure, under pretext of particular business. How lonely the vast castle seemed to Helen, now that he was no longer there. The transactions of the last few days, the beautiful archer boy, the offer from the Rosk, I always an event in a young lady's life, the siege of the castle, the death of her truculent admirer, all seemed like a fevered dream to her. All was passed away, and had left no trace behind. No trace? Yes. One. A little insignificant lock of golden hair, over which the young creature wept, so much that she put it out of curl, passing hours and hours in the summer house, where the operation had been performed. On the second day, it is my belief she would have gone into a consumption and died of languor, if the event had been delayed a day longer. A messenger, with a trumpet, brought a letter in haste to the Prince of Cleves, who was, as usual, taking refreshment. To the high and mighty prince, and see the letter ran. He champion who had the honor of engaging on Wednesday last with his late excellency the Roskai of Donnerblitz, presents his compliments to H.S. H. the Prince of Cleves. Through the medium of the public prince the sea has been made acquainted with the flattering proposal of his Serene Highness relative to a union between himself the champion, and her Serene Highness the Princess Helen of Cleves. The champion accepts with pleasure that polite invitation, and will have the honor of waiting upon the Prince and Princess of Cleves about half an hour after the receipt of this letter. "Toll old roll, girl," shouted the prince with heartfelt joy. "Have you not remarked, dear friend, how often in novel books, and on the stage, joy is announced by the above burst of insensate monosyllables? I'll old roll. Don thy best kirtle, child. Thy husband will be here anon." And Helen retired to arrange her toilet for this awful event in the life of a young woman. When she returned, attired to welcome her defender, her young cheek was as pale as the white satin slip and orange sprigs she wore. She was scarce seated on the dais by her father's side, when a huge flourish of trumpets from without proclaimed the arrival of the champion. Helen felt quite sick. A draught of ether was necessary to restore her tranquility. The great door was flung open. He entered, the same tall warrior, slim and beautiful, blazing in shining steel. He approached the prince's throne, supported on each side by a friend likewise in armor. He knelt gracefully on one knee. "I come," said he in a voice trembling with emotion, "to claim, as per advertisement, the hand of the lovely Lady Helen." And he held out a copy of the Algernon's Eating as he spoke. "Art thou noble, sir knight?" asked the Prince of Cleves. "As noble as yourself," answered the kneeling steel. "Who answers for thee?"
"I, Carl, Margrave of Gottesburg, his father," said the knight on the right hand, lifting up his visor.
"And I, Ludwig, Count of Hamburg, his godfather," said the knight on the left, doing likewise. The kneeling knight lifted up his visor now, and looked on Helen.
"I knew it was," said she, and fainted as she saw Otto the archer. But she was soon brought to, gentles, as I have small need to tell ye. In a very few days after, a great marriage took place at Cleves under the patronage of St. Hugo, St. Buffo, and St. Mendigo. After the marriage ceremony, the happiest and handsomest pair in the world drove off in a chaise and four to pass the honeymoon at Kissingen. The Lady Theodora, whom we left locked up in her convent a long while since, was prevailed upon to come back to Gottesburg, where she was reconciled to her husband. Jealous of her daughter-in-law, she idolized her son, and spoiled all her little grandchildren. And so all are happy, and my simple tale is done. I read it in an old book, in a moldy old circulating library. 'Twas written in the French tongue, by the noble Alexander Dumas, but 'tis probable that he stole it from some other, and that the other had filched it from a former tale-teller. For nothing is new under the sun. Things die and are reproduced only. And so it is that the forgotten tale of the great Dumas reappears under the signature of Teresa McWhirter. Whistlebinky, N. B.B., December 1. Rebecca and Rowena. A Romance Upon Romance. By Mr. Michelangelo Titmarsh. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.